This week on Two Legs, we will be talking about London Town.
London Town is correct. So remember, if you want good eggs, you got to feed your hen. And we're here with special guest, this guy.
Peace and love, no more autographs.
Owen Link joins us this week on Two Legs. Stay tuned. Hi, McCartney fans, and welcome to another edition of Two Legs, a Paul McCartney podcast. We are a Paul McCartney talk show mainly dealing with Paul's solo career. I'm one of your two co-hosts, Tom Hunyadi, and you may know me from my other show, Talk More Talk, where me and my co-hosts celebrate the careers of the solo Beatles. But today, I'm here with my Two Legs partner in crime, the one and only backwards traveler. He is Andy Nichols. Andy, what's going on, my friend?
Adjusting to the time change and surviving, yes.
I'm happy to hear that. Looks like you had a little fun last night seeing Mr. Steve Hackett.
I did. Always a pleasure seeing the maestro, original guitarist from Genesis. Pleasant evening, and probably the fifth time I've seen him in the last 5 years, and he never disappoints.
Oh, wow.
Never disappoints. Great show.
Oh, very good. Glad to hear that. We're talking about today. We're talking about this guy right here, London Town. You can see a picture right behind Andy. And with us today to talk about London Town, we have a very special guest. He is, you. He's a writer for Culture Sonar, We Are Cult, New Sounds Magazine, and he's got this. He's accumulated this wonderful resume of talents, collaborators with Paul McCartney that he's been able to talk to over the last couple of years, such as Eric Stewart, Carl Davis, Youth, Richard Hewson, and the one and only Mike McGeer McCartney. So let's give it up to Mr. Owen Ling. Owen, thank you for being here and joining the Two Legs show today.
It's wonderful to be here. It's certainly a thrill.
Very good. We'll make sure that fun time is guaranteed for all here. But first, before we get into London Town, we're going to talk a little bit about news. We kind of heard rumors early in the year that McCartney was going to be celebrating Record Store Day with the 50th anniversary of his debut album, McCartney. And it's official now, I guess we can say. And I'm looking forward to it. Record Store Days has been a favorite of my wife and I. We generally get in line at about 2, 3 o'clock in the morning, make sure we're first in line. We love it. We have a great time. And I'm looking forward to this release to go along with the Lennon, because Lennon and Ono, the Plastic Ono Band, are doing the Instant Karma single. There's some other stuff coming out, too, that I'm definitely interested in. But, Andy, anything caught your eye this year for Record Store Day?
Just the half-speed McCartney release. You, my friend, are like the hardcore Record Store Day professional, man. 2 a.m., you guys line up. You are dedicated, yes, passionate Record Store Day fans, you and your wife. And I can't thank you enough again last year for sending me the Home Tonight and in a Hurry single, which was
absolutely
great. That was thanks for that, and looking forward to the half-speed remaster. I don't really know. I'm not a huge audiophile, so I don't know the difference what a half-speed remaster is and how sonically that is different. I don't know.
Right. Well, there is information out there. Actually, someone posted about the half-speed, you know, what the difference is and what's all the hoopla about it. I haven't read it yet myself because, you know, like you, I'm not really a big audiophile guy either. As long as it sounds good.
Yeah, I know. I know sometimes when they do these kind of half speed remasterings, they take a traditional album and they spread it out across two discs. So maybe, I don't know if they're doing that with this, but you know, I'll be sure to get it, and that'll be like the 12th copy of McCartney on the shelf. So whatever.
Yeah. So to go with the you know, the Lennon and Ono, the Instant Karma, I'm definitely looking forward to. There's two Judas Priest releases that I'm looking forward to. There is a Ravi Shankar release to coincide with the recent Dark Horse coming out party. I know because Danny Harrison has brought back the Dark Horse label, so they are going to be releasing a Ravi Shankar bit produced by George Harrison called Chance of India. So that'll be a two record set as well. You know, I was kind of a fan of Skid Row back in the late 80s, early 90s. They're releasing one of their albums that I might pick up. And Rob Halford's other band, Fight, which had a release last record store day. The first album for that one. This time they're doing the second album. I'm looking forward to as well. Smithereens are going to be doing a 45 for Love Me Do and P.S. I Love You.
Cool.
Also,
I know
Smithereens are a big Beatles disciple. And they do this. They released a whole album on Beatles covers, I believe.
Yeah, a couple of years ago.
Yeah. Owen, are you familiar with Record Store Day? Do you guys celebrate it over there in Ireland? Do you participate at all?
People do. I don't really. So I'm pretty. But the amount of music that's being released is phenomenal.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems like every year the numbers that they that are being released to kind of rise a little bit, and also the numbers that they make available, you know, have been steadily rising as well. The McCartney and the Lennon each will be 7,000 copies worldwide, so there should be plenty to go around. I don't think anybody will have a hard time
getting
any of that stuff. Yeah.
And now one of the cool ones a couple of years ago was they did the Record Store Day of Maybe I'm Amazed, the 12-inch.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that was like a year or two before I started, so I don't have that yet. So I need to go out there and find it, perhaps.
Snap that one up. Yeah. But when is Record Store Day? April something, right?
April 18th.
Yeah. Cool.
Yes. Yes. So it's Saturday, and April is a beautiful month here in Arizona, so weather should be just fine. Yeah, actually. So, but anyways, let's get to our friend over here, Owen Ling. Owen, I noticed your first piece. I don't know if it was your first piece, but anyways, I noticed a few years back, about 2 years ago, you did an interview with Youth, and since then, I mean, the people that you've been interviewing is just you've been very impressive. You know, people outside of the McCartney world too, as well as Banks, and I think you also interviewed Hackett, talk about all these cool, let's talk about all these cool interviews that you've been doing. I mean, how did you get into, this world, or better yet, first of all, talk about, why McCartney? Well, I mean, what's it been about McCartney that you've been wanting to write about him for?
Well, as you're wearing a Hackett t-shirt, he was actually probably the first rock interview I did, and he couldn't have been nicer. I mean, the phone rings, it's Steve Hackett, I'm blubbering away, and I say, I listen to Selling England by the Pound religiously as a 16-year-old, I think I sound like a total fanboy. And he said, oh, thanks, that means a lot. And it's like, oh my God, he's a human.
Yeah.
I mean, as for McCartney, he's been my favorite Beatles since I was 14. I think around that time I was getting very, very badly bullied at school, and I had to report a few people to school. And there's that theory that you're ratting on your classmates. And I was reading books of McCartney and how, he had to put up a lot of rubbish with, suing his bandmates and bringing them to come up. And he just put up with it. And I was like, okay. And someone else had to go through a lot of that crap. And so, I mean, so maybe there's that kinship, but also he was, the best melodist of the four of them.
Oh, absolutely.
Certainly true, yeah.
Yeah.
As for Youth, that was incredible. I imagined this guru, this, professor of music, this emeritus, And he was just a guy like you or me, and like he couldn't believe it. He couldn't believe he'd worked with David Gilmour and Paul McCartney. But he said, I had the pleasure of interviewing Richard Hewson, and that was a thrill, Linton.
Very good, very good. Yeah, and then McGeer, how did you find McGeer? You know, he seems like a lovely guy. I mean, the interviews he gave us for that McGeer reissue, he seemed like a very lovely chap.
He was very happy to talk about, he said, with a mad Irish family, you know, and he was happy to talk about how he and Paul were like Irish kids in Liverpool, and he's talking about Liverpool Loo, and like, I mean, I'd never heard of this gorgeous Irish pub ballad before I met McCartney. I mean, it's mad that people in England know more about Irish music than we do over here.
Yeah. Hey, Owen, what was it like interviewing Richard Hewson? Was he still worried about incurring the wrath of McCartney for orchestrating Long and Winding Road? Or no?
I think they've moved on from that. He made a little bit of a dig where Thrillington was being reissued, and he said, "They don't tell me anything. I read about it on Facebook." I think he put that dig in deliberately.
Oh wow!
Go
ahead.
That was a wonderful piece. It was a piece I was very, very proud of, and I was amazed how well. Like, I felt like, without being too portentous or pretentious about it, I didn't feel I wrote it. I felt like it wrote itself, and that was the first time I'd ever felt that. So that was a really warm, fuzzy feeling.
Cool. Now, Carl Davis, you know, obviously he's getting up in age. I mean, he was responsible for helping, you know, Paul McCartney, you know, work on his first, classical piece in the classical world. I mean, he seemed like he was a nice guy, lovely guy as well.
He was. Now, let's make it clear. I only had 10, 15 minutes over the phone. Oh, yeah, not a huge amount, but like, I mean, so I had to get to the point, get the question, everything. But when the piece was published, his people put it all over their Twitter and Facebook, which was very, very kind of
cool. Yeah. Very cool. And then you've also written about albums, too. I mean, the last... You written about McCartney too. What was it about McCartney too that you find so fascinating?
Just how out there and wacky it is. I mean, this notion that, you know, that he was, you know, the commercial Beatle is total tosh, which we all know. But this was, I wrote in my piece that this was the boldest solo album, and I think it is. It's him putting his name out there. He's saying it's not like, you know, it's a Lennon cinematic avant-garde piece or Wonderwall music where you're going and thinking it's a soundtrack or something. This is a solo album, and much of it you're going, what is going on? Where are you listening to Double Fantasy and it's just 12-bar blues?
Right. Yeah, I mean, looking back on it now, I don't think, you know, McCartney 2 is as shocking as it probably once was in 1980 when, you know, people are listening to such commercial hits as, you know, With a Little Luck and Silly Love Songs, and then all of a sudden you hear, you know, Dark Room or On the Way or a Bogey Music, and, you know, I'm sure there was a definite shell shock when people were listening to this album.
Yeah, I think people just love to put McCartney's genre of music inside of a box, and you can't do that with him because he, you know... No genre of music is off the table for him with what he wants to do. So I think people need to really recalibrate. That's why his career has been so unfairly maligned and looked at over 50 years, because they want to just say Paul McCartney, pop tunesmith, and leave him in this box. And you can't do that. You can't do that with this man's discography. McCartney 2, case in point.
Exactly. Although I would say sometimes he hasn't listened to advice. I mean, I interviewed Eric Stewart, and he and I both said that it's press to play is so frustrating, it's so close to greatness, but you go down the hip Hugh Padgham route instead of, you know, making this great album.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although I know Tom's counterpart and co-host of Talk More Talk, Ken Michaels, I believe that's his favorite McCartney album. I think it is, isn't it?
No, actually, Flowers in the Dirt is his favorite, and I think Press to Play, I think, is the second.
Up there, but I know he's a big fan of that album too.
Yeah, Kittle Tool is a big defender of that album as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it does have its defenders out there for sure. I'm kind of hoping that if there is a press to play archive set, there is a stripped down version. You know, I would love to hear the original Eric Stewart demos. See how they I'm sure they're very different from the finished product for sure.
Absolutely.
I think bringing in Hugh Padgham in hindsight was a poor choice for that record too.
Speaking of Eric Stewart, you've also had the pleasure of interviewing Eric Stewart and actually three members of 10cc, right?
Yes, I've interviewed Gouldman twice. I've seen Kevin Godley give a talk, and I've interviewed him about Consequences and the Gizmo. And then Eric Stewart, who about Press to Play and his work with 10cc. Now, going with Eric Stewart, I expected 10, 15, and I got 40 minutes.
Oh, very cool.
Such a lovely, lovely man.
That's awesome. Very cool to hear. So
I'd like to say that because I see on 10cc Facebook pages people saying, oh, he's a horrible man. He's trying to stop the new 10cc or whatever. I couldn't have had a nicer experience.
Very cool. Very cool. I mean, that's something he doesn't do anymore is 10cc, right? He's pretty much done with that name.
I think he's done with music. Which is okay. Fine. I mean, if you write I'm Not in Love, you have every right to live, paint or take photographs or do whatever you want for the rest of your life. I mean,
right. Yeah. But we're talking, that's Gouldman though, right? That wrote I'm Not in Love, or was it Stewart?
It depends on who you speak to. The lyrics are Eric Stewart's, but Gouldman has a lot to. It's the two of them are co-credited.
Okay, gotcha. Well, that's cool. And then speaking of the Gizmo, I mean, obviously the Gizmo comes into play here a little bit for London Town. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But, what can you give us a little insight? Do you have any interviews coming up soon that you're excited about?
I actually, within a day or two, I'll have one with Alan Parsons, but we didn't talk about, it's about Ammonia Avenue, which is one of his albums, and because we were talking about that, I didn't get to ask what it was like on Wildlife or Abbey Road or...
Right.
But
maybe next time.
Maybe, still a lovely, lovely man. I mean,
Yeah, I mean, he has been giving his thoughts... on those, I believe he does speak in the Wildlife and Red Rose Speedway box sets, the archive editions. So I don't think, I don't think he's shy about talking about those projects, at all. So I definitely would love to talk with him one day as well. I mean, he seems like a very interesting guy.
He knows his way around the controls.
That's true. That's true. And anyways, so today's episode, we got... this guy right here, we are talking London Town. Andy, I mean, obviously you're a big fan of London Town. Owen, you said this was your favorite Wings album, correct?
Yes, I would say Band on the Run and Venus and Mars are better albums. Yeah. But there's just about this that grabs me, like the even just the dark silhouetted photographs, the intimate portraits, the acoustic keyboard textures, it's just gorgeous.
Yeah, I like what you said there, because I think you can have a what the best album is, but you can have something else can be your favorite. I think, it's like with Band on the Run, obviously, people consider it his best album, but I mean, it's just so overplayed right now. I mean, we get it, we appreciate it, but, let's move on. there's other good stuff out there,
Absolutely.
Yeah. We agree.
Yeah. So a few things about London Town before we give our thoughts about the album. One, it's released March of 78. It's produced by McCartney. Five songs were written with McCartney and Lane. So that team really flourished during this time. There's another song that didn't make the album but only became the biggest album worldwide except for here in the States. So we'll talk about that briefly later on in the show. It was, recorded in six groups of sessions throughout 77 and 1 month in 78. Multiple, reasons why it's been halted. You got Linda's pregnancy with James. You got the band becoming a trio again with Jimmy and Joe's departure, unfortunately. But they are throughout they're there throughout the album. There's no denying that. Yes.
Unfortunately for the album, because it's much sparser.
Right. Good point.
Not so dense. There's some great. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's some great work there from Jimmy on that album that, you know, we'll definitely celebrate here today. You know, and then we got, you know, one of the sessions was obviously, you know, Mulligan's Tire. I think that was August of 77. And, you know, we all know what happened with that song. So, but what's that?
What happened?
Yeah, what happened? Well, it wasn't a hit here. That's what happened.
I love that about Paul. Everyone else is going for, you know, punk rock and, you know, Queen are trying to tighten their sound. Genesis are trying to tighten their sound. And Paul, oh, I'll just get some bagpipes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Expect the unexpected.
Right. And we'll sell, I'll sell the Beatles with that, too. That's what we'll do.
Yeah. Yeah.
How does that happen with that song? I just don't get it.
It's wonderful. Anyway.
Yeah, it's a beautiful song. So let's talk about, you know, just our thoughts in general about the album before we go track to track. And Owen, let's start with you. I mean, just give your general, you know, thoughts about the album. Why is it an album that you love so much?
Well, the textures I love, to go with the Genesis comparison, it's sort of the Wind and Wuthering of the Wings canon. Like, Genesis had three very guitar stadium rock heavy albums, Selling England, Bit of a Tale, and then they come back with keyboard, symphonic, almost feminine piece. And I kind of feel the same here. After three studio high adrenaline albums, they're coming back and they're just toning it back. It's, you know, they're playing in Scotland, they're drinking some beers, they're being, it's gorgeous.
Andy, obviously, you have said that it is your favorite album, isn't it?
It is. Solo or Wings, it is my number one of his. It is.
Wow.
Just because I just like the mellow, low keyness of the album. To Owen's point, you know, it was just after the stadium, after the Wings Over America tour, and everything else like that. Just a time to pause and reflect. And the mood of the album is one that I've always enjoyed as a fan for decades, because it's so, again, to you, what you said, Tom, earlier, you know, the hugeness of Band on the Run and Venus and Mars and, you know, and just reducing and the textures of it. Like I said, Owen, you said, like the black and white photos, the photography, the whole package, 14 tracks, a lot of bang for your buck. Or, you know, in this case, because it was, you know, it was a longer album. It was about, you know, for a vinyl LP,
50 minutes.
It's long. It's long for an album. You know, I've always thoroughly enjoyed it. It's the mellowness of it is what I've always enjoyed about it. I mean, and you've got your couple rockers, you know, mid spread out throughout it, of course. But
right.
The whole texture of that album, the synths. I'm a big, obviously, you know, I like prog rock, so I enjoy synths a lot. And it's an album that's dominated by a lot of synth playing and stuff like that. So that's why I've enjoyed it.
Right.
Yeah, like, yeah. I mean, Faint Groupie strikes me as a bit of a prog song. Like, that has that, you know, bashy mid-70s English feel to it.
Sure.
Right. Yeah, you know, revisiting this album, because it's not one that I usually go to a lot. But however, I do appreciate it. And I do think when this album, I mean, because we'll talk about it later on, I mean, the album did get it did get panned. It didn't get really favorable reviews when it first came out, unfortunately. But I think when it gets re-released in the archive set, I think, like all of his albums, previous albums, they're going to get, you know, shown in a new light. I think, you know, they're going to get more favorable reviews. People are going to look back at them and say, oh, this was a good album, you know? And what I really love about it is what I love about Paul McCartney, and that's the variety of music that he can give us on an album. I mean, you've got everything here. I mean, you got the folksy stuff, you got the synth stuff, you got the rock stuff, you got the power ballad, you got the big pop number one song. You know, I mean, there's just so much here for him. You know, he's giving us so much on this album. And I just find it really hard not to like, you know, I mean, it's like I said, I mean, it's not something that I go to all the time, excuse me, but damn, it's an enjoyable record. It really is, you know, and the musicianship on this record is really good as well.
Wonderful. Yeah.
You know,
I find it interesting that some of his albums that were widely praised at the time, like Flaming Pie, now people have kind of detracted from that and maybe said, okay, that was a bit overpraised. And then some that get an absolute kicking Right. Like McCartney from London too. Right. People like albums.
Right. You know, and I never thought I would hear people say, oh my God, I really like Wildlife now.
I don't know what they're thinking on that.
And it's an album that I've always loved, you know, but same with Red Rose Speedway.
Yeah.
All these albums are just, you know, getting reevaluated and appreciated more and more.
I have a friend of mine who actually met McCartney at a signing back in 2005. And when he met him and he got his DVD autographed, he said, hey, Paul, my favorite album is London Town. And Paul did a double take and said, what? Yeah. So, yeah. And that was about 13 years ago, but you could even see, like, you know, it's just, it's so not expected to, you know, it's so not on his radar for somebody to come up and say that to him, you know?
Right. Well, let's go, let's talk about the tracks here. Let's, because like I said, there's 14 of them. I do like that some of the songs are a little on the shorter side. You know, McCartney can carry a song maybe a little too long from time to time, but that's just, you know, opinion. The title track starts off the album London Town. Andy, let's get your thoughts on the album, and if you want to give it a rating from 1 to 10, you know, just
sets the entire mood for the album right from the beginning, I think. You know, I don't know if it's a Mellotron or a Moog synthesizer that opens it up, but it sets the whole mood for the whole piece. Lovely, lovely melody in it. A little bit of a cheesy video for it, but but the song is top 10 McCartney. I'd have to rate it 10 out of 10.
Wow.
Yeah, 10 out of 10. I mean, that's, if I had, you know, ranking individual songs of his whole career, that's on the top 10. Without a doubt. I love the melody in it. I love the harmonies in it, especially with Linda and Denny in that song, especially and how it closes and the reprise in it. Just a 10 out of 10. Lovely opener for an album.
Gotcha. Owen?
Yeah, I think this is from the same inkwell of, say, She's Leaving Home, Another Day, just this, you know, he's portraying and painting everyone that's passing him by, you know, that,
right.
as Lennon would say, you know, boring people doing boring things. It's magical and cinematic. So, yeah, I'd give it 9 out of 10.
Cool, yeah. I mean, I think it's a great opening track. I love the dual guitar solo, towards the end of the song. I think it's fine. I do kind of like the lyrics are interesting, you know, people passing by in my imaginary street. I think is cool, which makes me think, is the song all fantasy? Is it all just his imagination, really? I think throughout this whole album, McCartney is in fine voice for this album. And like you said, the harmonies on this song are really cool. And I love the Denny and Linda, you know, when they're doing, you know, London Town at the end, I think is really exceptional as well.
There's a really cool YouTube video floating out there. Look it up. It's London Town backing vocals, Wings. And you can just hear Linda and Denny doing the backing vocals for a snippet of this song. Worth checking out if you haven't heard it.
Yeah. I probably would give this an 8 out of 10. Good track. Don't think it's perfect, but, there is some little cheese aspect to the song. But, not just from the video. I think, you know, the song itself, too. But as someone that's not the biggest synth fan like you guys probably are, I do care for, I like it, but I mean, I'm not the biggest fan of it, let's just say.
That's cool.
You know,
I'm walking off right now.
It's great. The whole Someone Somewhere Has to Know, which comes back and forth in the whole thing, it's just awesome.
Right. Yeah. Cafe on the Left Bank, which I think is an excellent track. I love this one from start to finish. I love the guitar work on this song too. There's great guitars throughout this whole song. Paul's in great vocals on this track, and this one I definitely give a 10 out of 10. This one I really enjoy, and Owen, what do you think?
I'm with you there. I mean, I used to think it was Paul McCartney on that opening arpeggio, but it's Paul Sally pointed out it's actually Jimmy.
Right. And then speaking of Jimmy, you know, we'll talk a little bit about Jimmy, but I don't want to get too much specifics because, you know, Paul is writing that book and we haven't read it yet. So I know he's going to help debunk a few myths, especially on, you know, on how he left the band and the two songs that he supposedly wrote. You know, so we look forward to reading that book. But yeah, you know, anything else on that song you want to talk about, Owen?
I like how it continues, you know, the metropolitan feel of bringing it from London to Paris.
Paris, yeah. Yeah. And it's almost, you know, you almost think it's going to be a concept album there for a second because of those first two songs, you know.
London, Paris, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But do you have a rating for it?
Nine, 10.
10? Okay, cool. Andy?
I unfortunately don't love this song that much. It's the only one on the album I think is a clunker. I think if it was resequenced somewhere in the album, maybe it would have been better. Like, I thought if it gone London Town, I'm Carrying, that might have been a nicer. I just think to go from that nice kind of mellow feeling from London Town and then going right into like the I personally have never liked it. I think the writing is good. I like it, you know. I think the lyrics are very good and strong. Its placement on the album, I'm not a fan of. You know, and I'm not a huge fan of the song overall. If I had to rank it, I'd give it like a 5 out of 10.
Oh, interesting. Wow. All right, I think I'm going to leave.
Okay. That's the only one that's going to be that low, though. I'm telling you right now.
Fair enough. Now, if there's going to be a couple low songs for me, my first one is this song, I'm Carrying, which is, you know, one of the ballads on the album. It was the B-side to London Town. You know, this is, to me, a ballad he can do in his sleep. You know, it's you know, like Warm and Beautiful or Love and Song. I think those three songs are just, like, easy for him. I think he can, like, do those in his sleep. I mean, I don't put it up on the pedestal as, like, you know, My Love or Maybe I'm Amazed or No More Lonely Nights, you know, that area of ballads. But I just consider this just like a, you know, kind of nice dreamy lullaby song. It's okay. I mean, the lyrics are nice. The guitar picking from Paul is nice. And actually, this is where the gizmo shows up. So maybe in a minute you can talk about that for a second, Owen. But for me, this I'm just going to give this one a 6. 6 out of 10. But Andy, what are your thoughts on the song?
I'm Carrying, 9 out of 10. And I think it's interesting that I think at the time when the album came out, George Harrison was quoted as saying it was his favorite song on the album. He enjoyed it. It was one of his favorite tracks. So that was good. That was, you know, reading that, you know, years ago was good enough for me to solidify my ranking of it. I love it. I think it's tender enough. Maybe it's a little twee, but it's fine for me. I think he wrote it for Linda at the time, who might have been pregnant with James, probably. Mm-hmm. But to me, it's you know, it's on that. I have it on that upper tier of, you know, No More Lonely Nights and stuff like that. I have it that high. So.
Maybe he was singing about her carrying something for him as in a baby.
Yeah.
I don't know. Just
maybe. Nine out of 10, easy for me.
Okay. You know, Owen, your thoughts on I'm Carrying?
Yeah, a good 9 from me. This is, you know, this is in the school of And I Love Her, Mother Nature's Son. Just these wonderful. Okay. Words. Right. No. I completely. I hear Val McCartney for me.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, you've talked to members of 10cc about this gizmo gadget, haven't you?
Godly. So, so that was a device he and Lul Cream devised before they were in 10cc. First time they used it, Kevin Godley said, on a 10cc track was on The Old Wild Men, which is on Sheet Music. Which is this stunning liturgical look at the aging within the rock idiom. And I think the first time Paul used it was on Liverpool Lou, which was for his brother Mike in The Scaffold. And they had a good working relationship in somewhere in the early 80s. Paul sang on one of Kevin Godley's songs called Get Well Soon. It's a Godley and Cream track. And maybe this was part of a deal that if he used the gizmo, he'd sing on it. I'm not entirely sure.
Gotcha. So this was like when Paul used the gizmo then for London Town. I mean, this is the only one in existence then.
So they were patenting it on the market. Godley and Cream had just made Consequences, which was this sprawling Homeric triple album where they used the gizmo. They went to the experiment every way with the gizmo. They just left 10cc. So,
okay.
And then in 79, Jimmy Page used it on In Through the Outdoor on a couple of tracks.
Ah, all right, cool. Thank you for that. Next up, Backwards Traveler. We'll kind of connect Backwards Traveler with Cufflinks, seeing that they, you know, they were part of the B-side with A Little Luck. Again, Backwards Traveler, you know, it's... excuse me, is recorded after the split of Jimmy and Joe. You know, definitely has that time travel feel, like that type of sound effects that you get, you know, through the song. Again, great vocals from Paul. If you're combining the two together, you know, I like the feel of that. I'll definitely probably give that an 8 out of 10 myself. And you know, good stuff. I think it's a, you know, as of right now with those songs, you know, this is a, you know, a really strong album so far, you know. Andy, what are your thoughts?
Paul has this incredible ability of kind of having fragments of songs laying around that he joins together. You know, he's done it on so many of his albums, you know, this being the case. He did it on Back to the Egg with Winter Rose and Love Awake, where he links these songs together, fragments of songs laying around. And this being no case with Backwards Traveler and Cuff and Link. The only thing I wish Backwards Traveler could be was just a little bit longer. It's so good. It's so good, but it's so short. I rated 8 out of 10. One of the cool things I remember when I first saw him live ever, which was 2002 on the Back in the U.S. tour, I bought the program. And in the program, there was a picture of him and there was a quote. And there was just the opening lines of the song. You know, did you know that I was always going back in time, rhyming slang? And I thought that was so cool to see, like, in an early 2000s context, that he's pulling a line from one of his songs that is not really well known into his, you know, big mega, you know, tour book, you know, collectible thing. I thought that was pretty cool at the time, looking at that, seeing that.
Gotcha.
Yeah, good, great song. I just wish it could have been a little bit longer. And I'd give it a solid 8 out of 10 for me.
All right, cool. Very cool. Well, we're all in agreement with that, it sounds like. Owen, did you talk about Backwards Traveler yet?
Not yet.
No.
Oh, yeah. Okay, cool.
Yeah, I think this is the nutty Batty McCartney, the, you know, the guy who follows the magnanimous here, there, and everywhere. In the town where I was born. Something like that. As a standalone song, it's a bit nonsensical. On the album, I think it follows, you know, three stunning lyrical ballads, and for that I'll give it 7 or 8. 7.5.
7.5, fair enough.
We're on the same page with that.
Right. Next up is Children, which is the second McCartney Lane composition on the album, the first being London Town. Owen, thoughts on Children?
It's a bit like looking at the Houses of the Holy cover. You have to think to yourself, different time, different time. I don't know if a singer-songwriter could sing, Children. But it's well-intentioned, and it's often idyllic. And I mean, Denny's not as strong a vocalist as Paul. We all know that. And so he hands. I much prefer Deliver Your Children, but I'll give this one 6 out of 10.
I'm right there with you. I give it a 6 out of 10 as well. I love the instrumentation on this song. However, I don't like the vocals on the song. I think it's not his Denny's strongest vocal performance by any means on any Wings album, wherever he had a lead vocal. I don't know if that was the singing style that he intended for that song. Maybe, but for me, it just doesn't work for that song. Andy?
I can agree with both of you chaps. 6 out of 10 for me. just because the instrumentation, as you pointed out, Tom, is great. Especially, I love the flute playing in it. Flute playing in it is really good, lovely arrangement throughout the whole piece. But the singing just doesn't suit Denny in this one. Much better on "Deliver Your Children," as I think we both agree.
Right, right. Next up is "Girlfriend." As we all know, this was a song that Paul attended for Michael Jackson, but he went ahead and recorded it anyways. Excuse me, which I'm fine with. I think it's a good falsetto voice from Paul. I think that's probably the best part of the song for me. I do like the arrangement a little bit better on this than the Michael Jackson version. But it's okay. I mean, it's another song they did after Jimmy and Joe's departure. But this was also demoed as early as 72, 73. So it goes back a little ways. I would give this probably a 7 out of 10 myself. Owen?
Well, I think the definitive version is the off the wall version. I think it's tighter, more concise. I think it gets to the point a bit quicker. And
right, true.
Michael's on fine voice. This reminds me. So before Glenn Gould was in 10cc, he wrote for the Yardbirds and Herman's Hermits, and then recorded them himself. So you get the definitive, and you get like the artist showing how he'd do it, and this is how I feel by how he's showing. So I would give Jackson's version 10 out of 10.
Oh.
I'll give this one, I think it's superb, fantastic, superb, well produced. And this one a little lower, I'll give it 7.5.
Okay,
cool.
I like it. Okay. Andy?
Yeah, we touched upon this in our last show with Kit when we talked about Michael Jackson and stuff like that, and we talked about both versions. Maybe the Michael Jackson one being a little more tightly produced by Quincy Jones and tighter. McCartney's, both good. I think both are great. I think the Jackson one is slightly better. This Paul's version might kind of go on a little bit too long. It might be a little long. And falsetto is something not usually in his normal roundhouse of singing. But I don't think it takes it away. And it's just as good as some. I like it. The whole like dun 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 dun. I like all that.
Right.
It might go on just a bit too long. I give it an 8 out of 10.
Okay. Well, you never know who may be listening to you since you said Take It Away. It's just a song every time I hear anything about Take It Away, it just takes me to that song because I love that song so much. But what'd you give it, a 7 out of 10?
8.
Oh, 8 out of 10. Okay. Cool. Next song 8 is the first rocker, or first true rocker of the album, I guess you would say. Even though there's some great guitar playing before this song on the album, but I've Had Enough. It was recorded on the yacht on Fair Carol, Coral. Sorry. Lyrics added late. This song came from a jam. Lyrics were added later. It's okay. I mean, I think it's like a second tier rocker from Paul. I don't consider it one of his better rockers, say as maybe like a High 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 or Junior's Farm, in that wheelhouse, if you will. Vocals are okay. Video is okay. I mean, the video is you get the first appearance of Lawrence Juber and the second appearance of Steve Holly in the McCartney video on these. So, but it's okay. It was number 25 here in the States and 42 in the UK. So I would give this one probably a 7 out of 10. Owen?
Well, as you say, it's not top tier rocker. I mean, Girls School, even if the lyrics are a little problematic, I think that's a much feistier, and I mean, we've got much more going on. But I think this, touching upon it in the interview with Eric Stewart, he was frustrated at the song "Angry." He says, "We're doing Angry, and you don't sound angry." It's like,
right?
It's like, you've got Pete Townsend, just, you're doing M.O.R. It sounds like you're having too good time. I do think on this song, however, Paul's just letting go. I've had enough.
Right.
No. Yeah. So
it does sound like he's had enough on the song for you.
I think so. Yeah. So for like the delivery, I think that punches it up to about an 8 for me.
Oh, okay. Very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. Andy?
Lyrically, not a great one, but
right.
But his vocal delivery on it is off the charts good. And for that, you know, for that, I'd give it an 8. You'd mentioned the videos of it. I think there's actually 2 versions of the video for this.
Yeah, there is.
There's like the regular one, and then there's one that's split in 4 screens, you know. So it's, you know, again, it's funny when you think about why, you know, doing videos for stuff like this. But it was the beginning of the introduction of Steve. It was just both guys, Steve Holly and Lawrence Schubert, or just one of them?
Yeah, no, both of them are in this. Steve and Lawrence are in this one.
Right, and also with a little
Yeah, well, too. When we get to the next song, we'll talk about the first introduction of Steve on that one. But go ahead.
I like it enough. You know, I'd give it an 8. You know, 8.
Okay.
Again, a little late. Not the best lyrics, but his vocal delivery is top tier.
Right. Yeah, I agree with the vocals. You know, they are strong. I think if, you know, this was done, you know, earlier, say maybe in the Venus and Mars era, you know, I think maybe it could have been a little heavier.
Right.
You know, and you brought up Girl School, which was recorded early on in the London Town sessions. I would have loved for that song to be on this album. I think it would have fit, you know, wonderfully on this album. Maybe put I've Had Enough as the B-side for Mullican's, you know. But I mean, that's the kind of rocker that I think of when I think of that era of Wings, you know, the Girl School, you know, Junior Farmer, you know, the stuff with Jimmy on guitar, I think just brought, you know, it up to another level. You know, not to give any, you know, say anything bad about Henry or Lawrence. I mean, because those guys could rock out great too. But I think Jimmy's guitar playing just really brought it up to date. And I think it's really spectacular. His guitar playing was really spectacular on a lot of these albums.
I think Henry was served better on the ballads. Like, I mean, the Searings, My Love.
Yeah,
and
the emotional... Emotional solos, you know.
Much more soulful guitar player.
Yeah.
Much more soulful, yeah. Whereas Jimmy, mm-hmm. Jimmy was much more of a real rocker, yeah.
Right.
That's intellectual.
Yeah.
Next up is the big number one hit from the album, With a Little Luck. Andy, let's start with you.
10 out of 10 for this one. 10 out of 10 for this one. And it's never been played live. How sad is that?
Right.
Never been played live. It might have been played live on the Japanese tour of 1980.
Correct.
Because they rehearsed it, and you can see video footage of them rehearsing it. So if he had never gotten busted, maybe we would have heard this live on the ill-fated Japan tour of 1980. I don't know. But one can dream. And listen, you never know. Maybe he'll bust it out and play it, you know, next year. Who knows? Obviously... You know, again, anything with McCartney and positivity and all those good things is radiates throughout his music.
Right.
His themes have always been very kind of centralized around love and family and peace and stuff. So which has always been enjoyable. But again, put it in a late 70s context with the loads of synths in it. Again, I love the full length version. It could have been 10 minutes and 45 seconds. I would have been fine with that.
Right.
I'm sure,
right.
Owen, I see Owen nodding in agreement. I think he would. I think he agrees. But the 3:45 edit. You know, whenever I'm driving and I happen to hear the edit on the radio, I'm like, it just you hear it and you're like, I can't.
It doesn't sound right.
No. So you need the full length version. And I think Tom and I talked during the week in pre production, seeing, you know, there actually was the 45 pressing did have the full 5:45 version on that, so at some point
on the radio you heard the 3:15, I think it was.
Yeah, the radio. So, you know, I don't think ever Paul officially issued it as a single at 3:15. He just included it, I think, initially on All the Best in the radio edit form. So, you know, but the official version on a single did have the full 5:45 version with the with the long synth solo in the middle. Great song. 10 out of 10. Again, it's on that list with London Town of the top 10 for McCartney tracks for me.
Right. Okay. Owen?
It's astonishingly inventive. It's a 10 out of 10 for me. Again, like as we've just said, in this instance, it doesn't feel too long. You know, there's enough going on. The instrumentation, it's flowering, it's flowing, it's cosmic. Going back to Genesis, it reminds me of Follow You, Follow Me. Both, you know, lilting, gorgeous, spectacular ballads.
Right. Excuse me. Yeah, you know what, Andy, you touched on something with when you were talking, the positivity aspect, and that's something that connected to me, you know, connected me with McCartney early on in my, you know, in my life. That's probably one of the reasons why I became such a big McCartney fan, is because, you know, the positive outlook, and, you know, yeah, it's the peace and the love, and, you know, all the all that stuff, and this song embodies that. I mean, it's a 10 out of 10 as well. I just love his vocals. I love the roughness of the vocals there later on at towards the end, you know, when it does get a little, you know, a little rougher. Yeah, exactly. You know, and then again, sometimes his bass playing gets buried a little bit. You know, you don't really, you know, hear how revolutionary he was until certain songs, you know, like this one and Silly Love Songs. But this one, I mean, I really dig his bass playing on this as well.
Like, could you imagine if he played this song live today, and for the, right, the younger fans that don't know it, who would hear it and go, holy crap, this song is tremendous. Right. Can you imagine? Yeah.
I think this song could be a hit today.
It absolutely could. I mean,
this is one of those songs that stands the test of time, really. I mean, it could work in any decade.
Yeah, I mean, it really could. And remember, I have to look at the album, but this opens up side two or closes side one?
It opens side two.
Right, so you've got London Town opening up side one, little synth feel. Side two, flip it over, boom, here you go again.
Even a bigger synth feel.
Right, you know, so, I mean, and the guide vocal, if you've ever heard the guide vocal, the rough demo, where it's just him, really with the, which I think it's just the bass and the synth, and it's like the scratch vocal, that is, right, that's great too.
Right. Yeah, so, go ahead, sorry.
Just incredible how this guy can knock them out, like you listen to Come and Get It, which he gave to Badfinger. He recorded,
right,
in less than an hour, like the original demo.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah,
and it's a massive hit. People give it flack, kind of like they give, you know, flack to Silly Love Songs. I don't care. It's an excellent song. It should be up there in his top 25 greatest songs of all time, in my opinion. I mean, the mad respect for the song from me.
Yeah. Video's a bit hokey. You know, the video's video's a tad hokey, but...
Yeah, and thanks for mentioning that, because that's, if you blink, you'll miss him, but that's the first time you'll see Steve Holly in a Wings video.
Yeah.
Even though he didn't play on the song, but you'll see him in the background kind of, you know, doing his thing.
Yeah.
So... And I'm kind of looking forward to asking him about it, because I think he's going to be at the fest this year. So hopefully we get an opportunity to speak to him, you know, and ask him some questions. So,
that one was 10 of 10 for all three of us, right?
Yeah.
Cool.
10 to 10. Not to steal from the Canadian Stub Muffin, but it is a 10 out of 10.
Okay.
Next up, the next McCartney Lane composition, it is Famous Groupies, which this is probably the folkiest out of all of them on the album, I think, right up there with Deliver Your Children. It's not a favorite of mine, but I do dig some of the lyrics on there. I like how he rhymes with, you know, groupies and rupees and, you know, stuff like that, you know. So one of his, you know, what did he just say? interesting lyrics. Again, fine singing from Paul. And some really cool electric guitar playing throughout this song as well. I think Paul did that throughout this song. But I would give this one probably a 7 out of 10 myself. Andy, what are your thoughts?
Similar. I'd give it a 7 out of 10 myself. Again, harmonies I liked on it. The rhyming. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Oh, and I think you'll pick up on this. Again, talking about the Genesis correlation here, okay? He's got the line in the song, you know, there was a lead guitarist who lived in Epping Forest, right?
First, yeah.
Now you've got the Battle of Epping Forest, right? So, from Selling England by the Pound. So that's another cool kind of correlation between the two. What was that?
Well spotted.
Yeah. I dig the track. It's not a big favorite of mine on the album. But I do like it. I'll give it a 7 out of 10.
Yeah. Owen?
Yeah, I'll give it a 7.5. I think it's a wonderfully... I think it's mildly polemical. I wonder if it's a dig at all those who criticize Linda McCartney for being in the band and those who decried JoJo Lane. You know, many people decried them as groupies. So maybe this is where him having a bit of...
Interesting take. Yeah, right. Yeah.
I just wrote a song about group famous groups. So that I have no evidence for that. It's just something that. Right.
And plus he doesn't. You know, a lot of these songs where he'll just say, "Well, it could mean whatever you want it to mean." So, again, whether or not he thought about things like that, who knows? But he would probably never say.
Again, don't get caught up in trying to analyze McCartney's lyrics. Just listen to the music and appreciate it. Don't look for solving the world's problems in McCartney's music.
Fair enough.
You can say that. I definitely think he was making digs at the Boys on the Ram album. There's no, like, I mean...
Yeah.
I was just a photo of two Beatles having sex. Like, yeah, we all know what you're saying.
Yeah, fair point.
Right. next one, song 11. Love it. Probably my favorite song on the album. It's the another McCartney Lane track. B-side to I've Had Enough. Like I said, it is my favorite track on this album, no doubt about it. I love Denny's and Paul's vocals contributions to this song. Another song that was recorded on the Fair Carol. Denny plays the Spanish guitar on this track. Great harmonies, like I said. This is a perfect song for me. Their partnership really came full steam on this song for me, and it's a 11 out of 10 for me. Nice. So but definitely a 10 for this song. It's perfect in my opinion. Lyrics are great. I just love the last line of if you want good eggs you got to feed that hen. I mean, it's just just great stuff. Owen, how about you?
Well, I might as well plug the fact that I did get to speak to Denny Lane shortly after I did the Eric Stewart, and I did a retrospective in the half hour, like all the his various musical permutations, and then as a way of talking about Wings, I talked about this album because it has 5 credits. Mm-hmm. So he said this was basically his song that he wrote and that he wrote to Paul. And right. the Spanish guitar solo, he learned while he was in Spain. He lived in Spain for a while.
Yep. Very true. Very true. It was originally Denny's song, and then McCartney contributed a few lines or a few words here and there to the song, which I'm glad he did bring this to the table. It's a great song. Yeah, Andy.
I don't think Owen gave us a ranking on this one.
This goes up to 11.
Yeah.
Well, that'll be unanimous for all three of us. I'll give it a 10 also. Again, you've got McCartney doing the higher harmony and Lane doing the lower one, so which is like a throwback to the Beatles, harmonies days, which is really cool. A real vocal workout, the whole, 2.5 minutes of it. Interesting here, I'm just glancing at Chip's book. According to them, the song was actually written 2 years earlier during the Venus and Mars sessions.
Venus and Mars, right. Yeah, that's also in Luca's book as well.
Which is interesting that it actually predates that far back. Yeah, but...
And that's one of the great things. I love how they bring back a lot of these songs that they've worked on in prior years, and then they finally get it right. They bring it back, we'll slip away from this for a couple years and then we'll bring it back and see if we can, bring anything new to the song. And a lot of times they did.
They really did. And this also sounds, and I'm not looking it up, but this sounds like this was just done with the trio, the three of them, after Jimmy and Joe had left.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Is that accurate?
No, actually, this was recorded on the Fair Carol as well.
Oh, so they were still there then?
Yes.
Wow, okay.
Yep.
What's that on? What's that?
I'm surprised as well. Like, it literally just sounds like two guitars and a drum.
Yeah. No, I think Jimmy does some acoustic guitar on the track as well.
Okay, cool. Yeah. But yeah, 10 out of 10, or we'll stay current here. Go 11 out of 10. Yeah, and I'm not sure. I'd have to look it up, but I think Denny's been featuring some of this stuff when he plays live now.
Yeah, so when my cousin David saw him last year or the year prior, he did do this song.
Oh, that's cool. That's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Danny performed a gig where he said about no words. He said that Paul adds 2 or 3 words and gives himself a co-writing credit.
Oh,
he's the
much.
Boss. He's the boss. Yeah,
right.
Do it.
Well, I mean, I don't think Denny ever had this much exposure in his life, you know, right? Even though he had a number one with the Moody Blues. I mean, this was, you know, I don't think if he was with Wings during this period, he probably wouldn't have had this level of success either.
No.
You know?
That's for sure.
But, I mean, he did bring some stuff to the table, absolutely. He brought some really good musicianships. He brought some really good songs with him. And, but, yeah, I mean, this really is, for me, the cream of the crop on this album.
Absolutely.
So, song 12, the Elvis tribute, if you will. Name and address. Yeah, exactly. which is fine, too. I do. It's another rocker or 50s-style rocker. Second on the album. Again, nice guitar work. I think Paul did this because he was really into this song. I do like his... you know, his vocal style, Elvis style vocals, excuse me, on this album. So it's not, again, it's not one of the top tier rockers, you know, from Paul either. So I'd probably stick this one with a 6 out of 10. But I enjoy it still, though. I mean, I'm not going to skip this song, you know, when it's on. So, but I don't think it's one of the best. So I'm sticking with a 6. Andy?
6 also for me. Again, another case in point, like I think we said with I've Had Enough. Lyrics are so-so. The vocals are great, but the lyrics are so-so. And the song kind of just trails off and ends and stops. So it wasn't really fleshed out. If he had linked this with something else, maybe. Definitely could have been. I mean, obviously, you know, it was an Elvis tribute with Elvis dying the previous year. But the fact that it kind of just meanders off and just stops has never been a big... good point with me. I mean, I don't skip it. To your point, I don't skip it either. But I just, it's great, and then it just stops. You know, so for that.
Well, I think that was done intentionally, just because it was just probably like a jam. They didn't know where to end it, so let's just, you know, give it the old burn, you know, ending, and that's it.
But I'll give it a 6 for me.
Okay, Owen.
I'm going to disagree with Andy. I do skip this track.
Okay.
But I'll give it a 6. It's a bit throwaway. It's fun. It depends on your mood. If I'm in a particularly intellectual mood and, you know, I need to find something, you know, a spiritual experience for my music, this is definitely the one that's being thrown out the window. But if it's a Friday and, you know, it's on, then it's good fun. You know, it's McCartney doing a pretty good Elvis.
Right. All right. So I think, what did you give? Did you give it a number?
Let's give it 6.
6? Okay. All right. Well, we all agree there. For me, next up, number 13, Don't Let It Bring You Down. Owen, why don't we start with you on this one?
Oh, I think it's fantastic. I think I love the Celtic melody. I love the is it a flute that's playing in the background?
Well, we can, you know, look it up real quick, but continue with your thought and I'll look it up.
It's actually a flageolet. I think that's how you pronounce it.
Going back to my interview with Denny, he talked about how he used to listen to the Furies and other Irish folk bands, and this feels like an Irish Scottish song.
It's called an Irish tin whistle. How's that?
We learned them in school. Yeah.
Okay.
I think it's gorgeous. It's beautiful. The weaving vocals are elegant and ghostly. So let's give it 9.
Oh wow. Okay. Well, I'm gonna disagree with you a little bit. This is the song that I will skip album. Instrumentation, it's great. I just don't like the slow vocals. I you know, I don't mind the folksy route that they went on with a lot of these songs on the album. This one just doesn't work with me. I just, you know, if it was maybe sped up a little bit more, I could get into it. But I feel like the track is just a little slow for me on this one. So I would give it a 5 out of 10 on this one.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. I love how we can differ on things.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's cool. That's what's cool about it. I'm gonna give it a 9 out of 10. Not yet.
Oh man. Fair enough. Fair enough.
9 out of 10 for me for Don't Let It Bring You Down. Again, another case in point where McCartney's got lower register singing, right? And then he goes falsetto at the end of it. So the arrangement of it is off the charts good. But the percussion in the track towards the end, tremendous, you know, especially up and down, you know, but then, you know, that.
Appreciate that. I love that he gives us different things. You know, that's just what I want from my favorite artist. I want him to, you know, experiment with his vocals. You know, give us, you know, different singing styles in a song.
Yeah,
if he wants
I will
to.
Say
I dig that.
Yeah, you know? I will say it's a song that as I've gotten older, I have appreciated. As a younger fan when I was a teenager, I did not like it. I did not. It was one I would skip. It's one that I grew to appreciate as I got older. Oh, and same with you.
Yes, Andy, I have a similar feeling for George Harrison's Long, Long, Long. When I was 14, couldn't stand it, and now it's my favorite track by far on the White Album.
I think Long, 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 I'm glad you mentioned that, because I think that's a track that has been tenfold appreciated more now than ever before. You know, especially when the White Album box set came out a few years back. You know, I just think that people, because, you know, it's such a low-sounding track. You know, and sometimes you got to turn the volume up to even hear him singing the song.
Right.
You know?
I think what brought that song a lot of attention too was it was brilliantly used by Scorsese in the Material World documentary at the end. That when you watch that film, which is probably one of the best documentaries ever, and you watch that 3.5 hour thing, and then you hear Long, Long, Long with the credits. I mean, you could be in tears watching that as that comes on.
Well, you're already in tears with Ringo's comment, you know.
And then that wonderful film closes with Long, Long, Long. I mean, my God, brilliant.
Yeah. Good stuff for sure. Last but not least, probably one of the more experimental songs on the album. It's the last McCartney Lane track. I kind of dig it. This is what track that I didn't really care for when I first got London Town, but looking back on it now, I kind of dig it now. It almost kind of has this Tenacious D feel to it. I don't know if you guys ever listened to Tenacious D, you know, a little bit, but, you know, it's just got that craziness, and then when he's doing the vocals, it's just got, you know, the acoustic, you know, him on acoustic guitar just wailing it out, you know, and it's a pretty kick-ass song, right?
Oh. Exactly. This song has everything but the kitchen sink thrown into it. It is
off
the charts awesome. I mean, I'm giving you a clear indication of how I'm going to rate it. I am, but and I'll just go first because I am passionate about this song. I freaking love this song. 10 out of 10. The bass playing in it, the groove. Oh my God!
Right.
I mean, incredible. Yeah. So I mean, well, you know, play this song for somebody who doesn't know McCartney as a bass player. Play them this song. My God, the riff, the bass riff in this song, stupidly good. And then, you know, so it's got that little riff in the beginning of it. And then it goes into the little acoustic bit, you know, the Grey Goose was a steady boat. There's that. And then the whole Morse code stuff at the end of it. Ugh, everything in it. I think it was a wonderful choice to close the album with it. And it's just another great example of McCartney doing everything that you don't expect him to do and going, here you go, listen to this for 6.5 minutes, people, and thanks for buying my album. Bye.
Yeah, I mean, you got you know, your rock, your folk, your experimental, a little funk in there. You know, it's definitely you know, a 10 out of 10 for me as well. It's just a really fun song. You know, again, like the vocals are, you know, he really just belts out that Morris Moose and the Grey Goose, you know, just Morris Moose part, you know, and just a kick-ass track. And yeah, and this is, again, the reason why I love McCartney so much, because he'll give you something like this that you is totally out of left field. You're not expecting it. Definitely on this album, after the first 13 songs, you're not expecting anything like this.
No.
You know? So, but Owen, your thoughts?
Well, I hate to disappoint. It's another 10 from me. But yeah. It actually reminds me somewhat of 1985, just, okay. Very grandiose, grandular, piano-centered, gravelly voices. Denny does this kind of backing harmony, which I don't know what he's saying, but it just sounds, it adds to the track. It adds to, you know, the flippancy and the vaudeville atmosphere. And as you said, the bass is just something else entirely.
Right. Yeah. So kick-ass way to end the album. You know, it's almost like how it takes balls to end an album like this. Kind of like how it took balls to end a show here in the States with Soily. You know, again, a song nobody knows. You know,
right.
I mean, you know, he played it over, you know, in Europe, you know, for those tours. But then you bring it to America. Nobody knows that song unless you're, you know, coming from overseas to see him live for that 76 tour. But yeah, I mean, it took, you know, took some balls to end an album this way, I think.
I forget, one of the songs on the Twin Freaks remix stuff incorporates some of Morris Moose. Might be the Coming Up remix where they incorporate the bass line from Morris Moose into it, which is part of that pre-show music that he always plays at his shows.
Right.
So, you know, it's right. Obviously it's been given its due there.
Mm-hmm. So that's it for the album. However, we should probably talk a few minutes about the big, massive, worldwide, you know, hit everywhere but here song, you know, because it was a part of the both songs, the you know, Melville Choir and Girl School. They were both part of the London Town Sessions. You know, question I wanted to ask you, Owen, is I know how McCartney fans feel about it. I think it's one of those love hate songs, because I have seen a lot of people say they love it. I've seen a lot of people say they hate it. I mean, how is it? How do people treat that song over in your neck of the woods these days?
Well, when you go into a woolen mills shop, so to buy, you know, one of the Clancy Brothers jumpers, it's perennial in the background. So that's the whole we're talking. So it is, you know, it's, yes, we have the crumpets and the tea and that imagery comes with it, but it's such a gorgeous painting of Scotland.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Gotcha. I mean, yeah. When I get to that side of the world, I mean, that's an area I hope to be able to visit. During my stay, to that song, the song itself. I mean, were you a fan of it right off the bat?
In Ireland, you have to do your junior certificate when you're 15, and I studied, one of my subjects was music, so we had to do a practical, and that was one of the songs I sang.
Oh wow!
Okay.
I don't think I did it very well, but it is one of those I sang. I mean, I the brother Ben, who was one of the teachers, played it on piano, and I sang over that. I didn't play it with guitar, and certainly no bagpipes. But, no, yeah, it's a standard. Either, as you say, it's Marmite. You either adore it or you despise it. I happen to be in the adore category. I also think it took great balls for McCartney to release this when, you know, the Sex Pistols, you know, trying to take down, and, you know, sing Mulligan.
Yes, I mean, the guy did have a set back in that time, for sure. Andy, what are your thoughts on the song?
Listen, I love it. I wish Paul would sometimes kind of just not worry about what people might think in this country, and he should have just released it and just to see where it would have done here. Because
I don't think it was really up to him on that aspect. I mean, I think it was more the radio stations that kind of ignored the song itself, and then they just chose to play Girl School.
I know, but you know what? He had enough people behind him that could have said, look, push this A-side in America and see how it does. And if it flops, it flops. But I think if it had been given the push and support that it should have gotten, it might have actually fared well in this country. because
it might have.
I don't think it would have sold as well as it did in the UK and Europe and in Ireland. Not a chance. I think it would have been okay. I think, because there's enough people that in this country that like it, it certainly could have been a top 10 hit in this country. I think.
Perhaps. I'm thinking more top 20 hit. I don't think a lot of people would have got behind. I mean, I think the diehard McCartney fans may have, gotten, behind the song.
But you got to remember, it's, summer '70. Yeah. He's still coming off the hugeness of Wings over America. His commercial stock is off the charts high in this country. So I think those same buyers would have flocked to it and bought it and liked it for that.
Yeah, I don't know if he had the backing that he did as a Beatle. You know what I mean? They put out Hey Jude. It's a 7-minute song. We don't do these kinds of things. Well, he's a Beatle. They do. You know what I'm saying? He wanted to do a double album. They wouldn't let him do a double album.
Yoko got two double albums. So hey, it's all.
Yeah,
good.
I get that. this is Paul freaking McCartney. I think he should have a little bit more leeway. I think I know he didn't always have confidence in his material. I know a lot of times he asked, people in the know if whether or not he should release a certain song or not. With this song, I think as great as it is, I'm the person that loves it well. I think it's a 10 out of 10 myself. Easy. But I think they probably did the right thing in switching it to probably Girl School as the, because I think it was here considered a double A side. I don't know if it would have been like a A and B side over.
Probably not, but I mean, they pushed Girls School, and Girls School didn't do anything over here. So
no, I mean, Girls School, I think was a top 40 hit here. I can't remember the exact number right off the bat, and now it's bugging me, so I'm going to check.
As far as Mull of Kintyre as a song, I'll give it a 10 out of 10. I think my favorite part of the whole song is the 2/3 of it when it comes back into the whole smiles in the sunshine and tears in the rain bit. I like that part of the song best. I think he did at least 2 or 3 videos for it as well. Campbelltown Pipers. I mean, there's the video on the Mike Yarwood show, and there was tons of video. I think there was at least 3 videos for the Mull of Kintyre. Oh, and you might be able to clarify.
I've seen at least 2. I do know, going to your point about smiles in the sunshine. I think those are Denny Lane's. He said that Paul came with him with the chorus, and then he helped with the lyrics from that.
Yeah.
Denny did add his contributions to that song also. The song went to 33 here. So I don't know if Mull of Kintyre would have done any better itself. I mean, obviously, we'll never know now.
This was the song that Denny sold his share of the co-writing credit for, right?
Yeah, this could have been his, steak potatoes for the rest of his life ticket right here. I mean, maybe. But I don't know. I mean, I mean, it's not played here. I don't know how, if it's, like you said, you hear it in your, shops when you go shopping or whatnot. But, on the radio-wise, I don't know if that gets a lot of airplay still, on that side of the planet.
No, it does. It's one of those, if maybe as a sort of a 70s set, but it's definitely there.
Okay. Yeah. Right. Yeah, so great song. It outsold She Loves You, sold over 2 million copies. It's still the highest selling non-charity single of all time over there on that, in Europe or England, I should say. So, but yeah, amazing track. I love it. Yeah, I would love to see him do it live here. But, I'd be afraid that it'd end up being the bathroom or the beer run song,
No, I'll wait. I'll wait for that. I'm going to watch that song.
Right.
I heard Sam Wiles do a show with you, and I admire Paul McCartney podcasts greatly. But I had to almost with one thing where he said that it made him feel proud to be British. I'm like, I think it's an Irish song. Like,
right. Yeah, I mean, the whole thing was to do like a Scottish, a traditional Scottish song, right?
Yeah, that's what Denny Lane said. He said that, have you heard of Billy Connolly?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, well, he said that Billy Connolly said that he liked it, and he thought, I'm glad he could have slagged us off on stage.
But have you been able to see McCartney live, Ewan?
That's all right. I actually haven't, and I probably should, but I'm not. I don't like going to stadium gigs. I don't find them particularly intimate. I went to see Roger Waters 2 years ago playing basically Dark Side of the Moon, and I thought I could just play the album, and people have spent £80 for this.
Right. Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah. But I'm kind of curious about this Glasgow, show, whether or not he'll whip out Mull of Kintyre for that show, So
he probably will. I know he's played whenever he plays Canada. He's played it in Canada too.
Yeah. So let's just hope that the show doesn't get canceled for but that's an outdoor venue, right? For the Glasgow.
I think so.
Yeah, because shows and sporting events are starting to slowly get canceled throughout Europe. So
they've even canceled a Bond movie. That's saying something.
Yes, absolutely.
Wow, because of all this
coronavirus.
Oh my God, really?
Yeah. Actually, Bond was our Daniel Craig was on last night's Saturday Night Live, so I'm kind of curious to watch it now and see if he says anything about the delay of the movie.
So
I think we need to. Sorry. Yeah. I don't think Owen heard you. Is that what you were asking to repeat it? Did you hear it or no?
What's that?
Oh, and did you ask Tom to repeat what he was saying or no? Did I mishear that? Oh, okay.
So like aftermath of the London Town album, it did, like we said earlier, it didn't get favorable reviews, wasn't looked upon as an instant classic, which Band on the Run was getting, Flowers or Venus and Mars was getting great reviews. I know Wings at the Speed of Sound got mixed reviews on that one. Obviously, a lot of people loved Wings Over America, and then this one, it's got a completely different feel. it's just like we talked earlier. I mean, I think people weren't expecting this sound at that time from McCartney. I know he was displeased with Capitol. He wasn't happy with the push here in the States. I mean, it did go to
number two
here. Yeah, it went to two here. It did sell over 1 million copies, and I know he signed with Capitol the next year, the following year, 79. I mean, not with Capitol, but Columbia.
Here.
So obviously he was a little displeased from Capitol. So, But what are you going to do? I mean, it's out now. I think, like I said earlier, I think people are going to look at it as a more positive sounding album. And I think it's going to get, looked at differently now when it finally gets that archive release.
Yeah. I don't understand the appeal for Back to the Egg, but this one has so much going for it.
Yeah. When you listen to Back to the Egg, which is an album I really enjoy too. But you got that rocker ballad kind of almost type feel, to the album. You don't have, I don't think you have the variety on that album like you do here with London Town. So so for that, I'm really really enjoying London Town. Andy, you said it was your favorite of all of his albums. And I'm kind of curious to see where you rank this in the whole McCartney catalog as well.
Well, this guy called John Medd, he took a photo of a tweet I put up, which I put London Town in the top five, and he was like, because he wanted to make a case for Flaming Pie, but I think so much better than Flaming Pie. I'm in a minority here. I know Flaming Pie is seen as a McCartney-naissance in the 90s.
Sure.
This is top four, top five in his catalogue.
Oh, wow. Yeah. This was an album that was always probably, never in my top 10. I'd listen to it, but I wouldn't, play it as much as, say, like stuff like, Tug of War, Flaming Pie, Ram, even Wildlife. But listening to it, quite a few times these last couple weeks, it might be getting in that top 10 now. I really found myself enjoying it more than I ever have, and I like that from an album, which is kind of making me nervous about Off the Ground, because that's my least favorite McCartney album.
Wow.
What's that?
It has some good moments. I mean, Wind Up opens beautiful.
Oh, I think that's a great song, and I think it would have been a brilliant album if all those B-sides were on it instead. But that's another show.
You're like a character.
Show. Yeah. So Owen, thank you for joining us for this look at London Town. Tell us what you got coming up. I mean, what are you doing? What are you working on these days?
Well, I'm working on a project on U2 that hopefully I'm going to finish. I don't know how much I can go into it.
Okay.
It's a bit bigger than my other projects, and I know that's not connected to McCartney, but.
Fine. Plug anything you want to work. Plug whatever you're working on.
I've just done an interview with Glenn Matlock of the Sex Pistols.
Oh.
So, yeah. So that was. And I'm still a month or two ago, I interviewed Pete Best. So that was a fan moment. He was in a band with McCartney. I don't know if you know that.
Never, yeah. I mean, I think somebody's written about that somewhere.
just once or twice.
Yeah. any plans to come to the States anytime?
We'll see how this election pans out.
Okay, fair enough. What else? Anything else coming up?
Just the U2 project is really taking up basically everything. I'm hitting a deadline, and you know. I'm afraid my hair is going to fall out. basically, that's all I can talk about now.
So this is this U2 project, and I mean, you're expecting it to be a big project and coming out in the future? Oh, book form.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very cool. Well, we wish you luck on that one, for sure.
What are your plans for the next show?
Oh, next show we are going to do our first worst to best show with album covers, actually. So kind of looking forward to that. I can tell you right now that this London Town is one of my least favorite album covers.
Wow.
And I'll give you a little sample of what I'll say. It just looks like a cut and paste album cover to me.
Fair. That's a fair. That's fair. It does look very cut. It does look very Photoshop and cut and paste, but I love
that's
it.
Just my opinion.
Oh. Well, I mean, you know, obviously I love it. I have a huge, you know, 24 by whatever thing. So I think I quite like the cover well enough.
Right, yeah. Right. And then Andy and I are both going to be at the Fest for Beatles Fan later this month. Looking forward to maybe doing some videos with some of our friends there and some guests, and maybe we'll have the video up at the end of the month for that as well. You know, Lawrence Juber and Steve Holly are going to be there, which are the two you know, Paul connections. A lot of great authors are usually there every month, so I'm probably going to bring a couple books to get signed. You know, our friend, or you know, my co-host, Talk More Talk co-host, Kenneth Womack, is going to be there, who's just been pounding the book after book after book. So maybe I'll you know, bring a book or two for him to sign when I'm there as well. So
actually, I would like to say thank you to Kenneth Womack, who helped facilitate an interview I did with the producer Chris Thomas. So I'd like to say this on
tape. Well, that's right, because you interviewed Chris Thomas as well. I mean, there's just so many now that I just can't keep up with them.
You did a killer interview with Chris Thomas.
Yeah, when we did the White Album symposium. That was a lot of fun. Great guy. You know, he had no problem talking about, you know, all that stuff. And it was a lot of fun. It was great meeting him, and made me want to, talk to more people that obviously worked with McCartney, you know, for sure. But it was a good start, you know. He was my first interview with anybody that ever worked with McCartney, so it's I would say that was a fine place to start, you know.
Yeah.
So, but any contact information? Anybody can get a hold of you?
Okay, I have a Twitter account. It's so it's at Owen Ling, E-O-G-H-A-N, at, or it's either Owen Ling or E.M. Ling, because when I write poetry, I like to go as E.M. Ling, okay. because it's like Forster.
Fair enough.
Or I have a WordPress, which is my name, and you can contact my email that way.
Awesome. Great. Well, our contact information, as always, you can email us at twolegspodcast@gmail.com. You can check us out on YouTube at our YouTube channel, Two Legs Podcast there. Obviously, we have our all of our audio versions on Podbean, iTunes, iHeartRadio. You can find all that stuff there. And like I said, if you want to see our wonderful mugs, you can head over to the YouTube channel and watch the video cast version as well. What else do we've got? Like I said, we're going to be back in a couple weeks with another episode. Maybe you'll see us at the Fest for Beatle fans. I'm looking forward to finally meeting Andy in person, so that's going to be great.
Yep.
You know, hanging out and seeing a lot of friends that I met during the White Album Symposium. And I mean, Andy, how many of these fests have you been to over the years?
Probably 10. You know, over the course of a 20-year span, I've probably been to about 10. You know, I don't go every single year because they get a bit repetitive. But yeah, I've probably been to about 10 or so over a 20-year period. So, you know, happy. Yeah, it's looking forward to it. And check us out when we get there. And, you know, we'll be there with our friends and looking forward to having a good time and meeting up with everybody.
Yeah, great. So, again, thank you, everybody, for listening. We really enjoy enjoy your comments and your emails, so keep them coming, and we'll be back again. So for Owen and Andy, I'm Tom, and as always, have a great day and a beautiful night. Take care.